We got action.
You are now tuned in to Intellectually Petty Radio. Hey, yo, Josh. We got action, homie.
And you are now tuned into another episode of Intellectually Petty Radio, brought to you by M3S3 Clothing. Men make moves and suckers stand still. And as always, on the mighty, mighty, mighty Nerve DJs Radio Network, y'all already know, week after week, day after day, month after month, we only rock with legends over here. And today is absolutely no exception. We have the premier poet in all of the galaxies. If you have a soul and vocal cords, you need to be hollering at Prentice. What's going on, bro? How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. How are you today?
I'm doing great, man. How's your family?
My family is good, bro. My family is good. We in motion. We in some good, healthy motion right now, man. So I definitely can't complain.
No doubt, man. You got kids?
Yeah. I got a total of 4 or 3 with me. So I'm busy 24/7, man.
What they think about the poetry?
I don't think they think too much, unless I'm around or working with somebody they admire and respect. You know what I'm saying? Like, they so used to it, bro. Like, it's all they know with me since they've been born. You know, me doing poems and stages. So, you know, they don't really trip off of it.
What was the first poem?
Ooh, first poem I ever wrote was called "The Streets." It was a real just basic something, man. I got inspired by my cousin Tyson. Shout out to my cousin Tyson Amir. He came to the local library and did a poem. And growing up, I copied everything he did. So came to the library, did a poem. I was like, I want to try that. So I went home and wrote a poem. But it was called "The Streets." Real basic, you know, like description of an urban environment.
What about it made you fall in love?
The freedom, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, I grew up on hip hop, you know, like I'm a rap fanatic. I love rap music. But for me, I'm not a rapper. And I think it takes a certain talent with rap because it's constrictive to me. You got to write within a certain 16 bar format, you know, with music. But with poetry, man, my first couple of poems I wrote in third person because I wasn't really comfortable talking about myself in front of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then the more I did it, the more I could see people could relate. So it kind of like released a veil off myself and have just like, fuck it, I'm talking about me. You know what I mean? And so I think that freedom, man, really, it provided me a really safe space, like therapy. And I was good at it. So, you know, I just kept at it, man. But it's really the freedom.
Most personal poem.
Oof. Damn, that's hard, man. Because I would say, it used to be, I got a poem about my son. It's called "Good Father." I did it on a Arsenio Hall show. That definitely has to be 1 or 2, but I got another one that I just finished about my mom that really hits just because of where we at right now. So it'd be in between this new joint I got about my mom. I call it "Mother Seed," or it would be "Good Father" about my son.
What's the good father to you?
Present and forever working at this whole fatherhood thing. You know what I mean? Like, I realized, like, with my pops not being there, I kind of gave myself a pat on the back just because I've always been present. You know what I'm saying? Like, I used to have to fly every 4 weeks once the court let my son go from the Bay to Florida with his mom. I used to fly every 4 weeks to go get him and bring him back to the Bay for 6 weeks. And, I realized that, you know, like, being present means so much and it's everything. But at the same time, I think I got kind of stagnant with fatherhood. Not to say I was lazy or anything, not at all. But being present isn't enough. You know what I mean? Being present is cool, but there's still a lot you got to learn, especially if you ain't had a blueprint. Being present and forever working at it. You know what I mean? I think those two are what really make a good father.
And the moms get all the credit, and I'm not taking any credit from moms at all.
Right.
But it can be difficult sometimes to see that as the other parent and feel like, damn, what am I not doing?
Yeah.
You know, but what I realized though, because I have adult children.
Uh-huh.
You get the credit. You just don't get it when you think you deserve it.
It's not on your time.
Yeah. You know, like when I had surgery a few years ago, my kids drove it. Like, this was right to the height of COVID, so they couldn't come in. They drove to the hospital, 3 hours just to look at me through a window.
That's hard, man. How old are they?
What is it, Jennifer? 30. She'll be 33 this year. Nika will be 31, and Kiki will be 30.
Word. And as grown adults, they made that trip for you.
Yo, I'm telling you, I cried like a big ass baby.
The shit. I mean, how could you not? You know what I mean?
Oh my! But that's the credit that I didn't know I needed at that point when I had whined about shit 20 years ago.
Bro, you know what's crazy about this already? We just did another. So I got a podcast called All Black Men Need Therapy, right?
We was gonna get into that, but go ahead.
We just recorded an episode last night, man, that had me in tears on the episode, and it ended up being about me and where I'm at right now with fatherhood and me wondering how good of a job I'm doing right now with, you know, specifically my 13-year-old son, because I went through a bunch of shit with my 15-year-old, my oldest, and had to send him back to his mom because he was cutting up too hard. And just me not knowing, like, not having a benchmark necessarily to measure how good I am doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So to hear you talk about how at 20-something years old, your kids came through and drove for 3 hours just to look through the window. It's a trip, because that's what they were talking to me about later on. Like, you never know when that confirmation is going to come, but it ain't going to be on your time when you think you want it.
Facts.
You know what I'm saying? So
that's
crazy.
That's crazy. And we part of the problem, though, too.
Why you say that?
Because we condition our children to do shit effortlessly. I don't want to sound arrogant, but they see us be emotionless. Like, the first time I cried in front of my daughters, it was fucking confused.
Uh-huh.
Because they hadn't seen that.
Mm.
And so we carry ourselves like society tells us to, but that has an effect on our children.
Mm.
So they get accustomed, like I call my daughters every weekend. For a long time, if I didn't call them on the weekend, I didn't hear shit.
Right.
And why won't you call? Well, you're going to call us. Mm-hmm. You're going to do this. You know, we spoil them so much, or get them trained to think a certain way, that when we want them to think another way, they don't know how.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know,
I'm kind of the opposite, though. Like, I've always been an emotional dude, like, even as a kid, you know, like, I'm an empath, like, heavy, like, for real, for real. Like, I feel shit on a way deeper level, man. I feel people's energy.
That's got to be tough.
It is, to tell you the truth, because I was raised to think that was a weakness. And then I got older, and the way I poured into my art, she got me traveling the world. It got me being Grammy nominated for being able to express my emotions. But at the same time, you want to teach your kids that, you know, there ain't nothing wrong with expressing your emotions. But I still know that I need a little bit more emotional control. So it's like, where's that balance? You know what I mean? Like, where do you find that balance? Because I'm not one of them fathers that they ain't never seen cry. My kids have seen me cry, because I teach them, like, yo, tears are a natural part, a natural emotion. And sometimes it's what you need in order to get through whatever you're going through. So if you got to cry, cry.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And pick yourself up. So for me, I struggle with the balance, bro. I struggle with, like, how much of that do I let them see? You know what I'm saying? Because at the same time, I don't want to weaken them.
My daughter told me one time, look, daddy, I don't need to know that. And that was our lie. That, you know, your kids are going to tell you, in lack of a better terms, how to raise them. You know, once they get, you just got to pay attention. And sometimes you don't even have to pay a fucking attention. They will come straight tell you to your face.
Right.
You know, and you can, you know, like, our parents would get a little defensive if we tried to explain, hey, this is not working for me.
Hell yeah.
You know, but now I think we have learned that, okay, maybe it's not working for you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a better way I could be doing it that works best for both of us. So the fact you asking questions, bro, leads me to believe you're doing a great job.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I care about the job. I love it. You know what I'm saying? Like, fatherhood is fun, man. Like, you know, like I raise these people who love me off top.
Wait till you get some grandkids.
Come on, man.
Oh, my God. Grandkids are everything, bro. Oh,
man, I can only imagine. I ain't trying to imagine right now because mine are young, but I can only imagine.
Ooh,
get to love on them like your kids and drop them off?
Exactly.
Come on.
Yo,
come
what's
on, bro, with that?
What's it like getting Grammy nominated? Like, who calls you?
It wasn't a call. I posted it on my page. I'll send it to you. I found out when the world found out. That's how the nominations work. You don't know until they make the announcements on that day.
So are you watching, or is it somebody? So you kind of knew.
I didn't know. The whole Grammy thing was a play for me. Like, that was deliberate from the start.
Okay.
You know, like, when I found out that the Grammys had created a category for best spoken word poetry, I was like, oh, I want that. You know, I want to drink orange juice out of a Grammy trophy. You know, I want that accolade. I done worked hard enough. I want that. So I started 16 months in advance to call my homeboy Sean and call my man Matt, who does the videos for my poems. And I was like, yo, let's go win a Grammy. And so, you know, we started with no PR. We had no management, no marketing. You know, it was all out my brain, man. And, you know, luckily I had two dope people with me who were down for the cause, and we made it happen. But, you had to push and really grind. Like, we grinded for 16 months for that, man. So I remember it was November 5th was the announcement. I was right here in the crib, and I was watching on the phone, and we were the second name they announced, and I went crazy. You know what I mean? I went crazy. Because you got to think about it. Like, everybody else is spending 20,000, 30,000 for PR and marketing and doing all this stuff, and it's me and my two homies, and we shot everything out of Oakland, California on purpose, recorded the album out of Oakland. I got no management. This was all out of my brain. We sat down and strategized. We're going against machines. You know what I'm saying? Like,
so spoken word artists have machines?
What I'm saying, no. And that's what I'm saying. Like, some are getting up there, and the brother who's been winning, he definitely does. You know what I mean? But, you know, coming from the Bay and being from Oakland, we got a real out the trunk kind of spirit as far as our art goes. You know what I mean? And that's kind of the path I wanted to take. I wanted the people to confirm it. You know what I mean? Not necessarily because of the accolades I have or being on TV, but because I rock with the people and I'm genuine. And that's what I wanted to kind of reflect. And I was like, you know, if I'm going to go for something, I'm going to go for the highest at the top, because if I fall short, falling short going for a Grammy is still a win. You know what I mean? Like, that Grammy nomination, I didn't realize the Grammy nomination was as big as it is until it happened. You know, because I was so focused. Like, I'm Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan obsessive with this poetry. Like, I don't lose. I like to win. You know what I mean? And I don't do friends in the poetry game. Like, I'm trying to kill you if we're sharing the same stage. So my goal was to win. So it kind of took losing for me to understand the significance of what we did accomplish. You know what I mean? And it really changed.
That's fucking dope. Yeah. That's dope. Let me ask you this. From Oakland, love hip hop. Who is more relevant to the Oakland hip hop culture, Boots or Too Short?
I don't think you can pick. I think Too Short has a more cultural relevance overall in rap music in general. You know what I'm saying? But as far as Boots goes, if you know who Boots is, if you know about the Coop, which I grew up on,
nigga,
it's kind of hard to
criminally
deny that man's influence and presence. You know what I mean? Like, he's done a lot.
Criminally slept on.
What?
It's
classic album, man.
Yo,
album. I still got that CD. The blue CD is blue.
And I can never remember old girl's name.
Pam, the Functress.
Yo,
ew.
Man, I don't know. You know, if you out there and you happen to check this out, please do your soul a favor and go listen to the Coop.
Oh, man, you gotta listen to the Coop. If you're not up on the Coop, man, you claim to be a hip hop head, you tripping. Just straight up, I don't care where you from, you tripping. They both got a lot of impact, man. You know, like, they raise us. Their lyrics raise us, whether you like them or not. If you're from the Bay, especially from Oakland, you grew up listening to them.
Yeah. Yeah, shit. I'm nowhere near the Bay, and I grew up listening to them too.
That's dope.
Yo, what's being a black man in America? Break that down for me in a brief synopsis. What's it like today for you?
It's more peaceful than it was because I really don't give a fuck no more. You know what I mean? Like, I went through my stage of just identifying all the racism and oppression and all the adversity, and that made me angry. You know what I mean? And you know, just seeing how people are constantly on our heads 24/7 just because we black, that made me really angry. And I didn't want that anger no more. So I had to figure out how to release it. So for me, being a black man in America, it's like the ultimate freedom, man. We superheroes. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like we got superpowers, bro. And it's on you whether you want to identify that or not and how you want to use it. You know what I mean? So for me, I walk around this shit like, you know, I'm a black man. You know what I'm saying? Like, I do what I want. I say what I want. Y'all emulate me 24/7 anyway. So I'm probably going to do something fresh and dope that y'all going to try to steal. You try to steal that, I'm going to create something else that's dope and fresh. And I'm going to keep it moving. And y'all going to respect me for it. You know what I mean? So that's, you know, that kind of goes back to the Grammy thing for me. It was like, I don't think the Grammys, the Recording Academy, seen anybody like myself and Sean, who I did the album with. Shout out to Sean Williams.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to be authentic black men, not saying nothing on the album that we didn't mean, standing on our blackness, you know what I'm saying? And look, we got Grammy nominated for it. Now what you gonna say? You know what I mean? Like, what you gonna say now?
Is that the dude in the back of the videos?
No bitches and hoes. And if that's your thing, cool, but that's not what I wanted to do. We wanted to talk about being an authentic black man in America, and we did that. And you know, I think it just elevated and put the focus on, you know, how talented we are as black men.
No bitches and hoes. It got me thinking. I interviewed Malcolm Jamal.
That's my man.
Like a year ago.
Uh-huh.
Very, very, very dope conversation. And as you know, like he thinks that we should not be using the word nigga.
Uh-huh.
I am horrible with that word. this is my mere existence probably makes him cringe. Like, right. Just wake up, like nigga. What are your thoughts on it?
You know what? To tell you the truth, man, the older I got, the more I've used it. I used to be on that, you know, not using nigga and knowing the history of it. And I say to each their own. And you know, the older I get, the more comfortable I get with who I am. So, you know, I think we all have our battles, and I respect everybody who doesn't use the term. It ain't, you know, I'm not obsessive with it, but when nigga comes out, and I ain't got no qualms about it. You know what I mean? And if you somebody who don't like the word, I ain't got no qualms about that neither. It's to be honest with you, man, I feel like there's bigger things for me personally to be fighting than the use of the word nigga by black folks. It just don't resonate with me the same at this age anymore. The importance and value of us as black people not using the word nigga, just for me personally, I don't care. I don't have a problem with it. It's been in a term of endearment.
Oh my God.
More forever. In my life, it has been an offense. I've had a white person call me a nigger once.
What? Tell me about that.
I was at Applebee's, and dude didn't like the fact that I parked so close to his car. And when he was getting in his car, he called me a nigger, and he dropped his keys when he was getting in the car, and he caught a couple of hands, man. And it was really that simple. And
fuck around and find out today.
He fucked around and found out. First and last time anybody's called me a nigger, and I don't hold that experience close to my heart. You know what I'm saying? You know, white folks is like that. You know what I'm saying? I know they think it a lot more than they say it, at least to me. So you know, I don't stress off nigga. You know what I mean? Like, again, I grew up listening to Too Short, bro. Like,
yeah, like it
I really did. You know what I mean? Like, I grew up listening to Bitch. I grew up hearing nigga. I grew up around pimp culture. You know, it's where I come from. So, you know, salute to everybody in their battles, but that's not my fight. Everybody got the bag with this blackness, right? So That's just not my bag, to be
fighting. One of the few words that unites us all in the barbershop, whether you like it or not.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. And that's the most freest place for us, right? That's all of our therapy is the barbershop. This nigga tripping. This nigga crazy.
Are they pricing us out of that experience?
You said what?
Are they pricing us out of that experience?
Or who pricing us out?
The barbershops. Because when I was getting a barbershop back in the day, and I granted back in the day was a long ass time ago, but I could get a haircut for $10, $15.
Right, not no more.
That's appointment money right now. That's a down payment.
Right.
So my thing, not everybody can afford a $50 haircut.
Who you tell? That's why I had to learn how to cut my own hair at 19. I had to fuck my head up for 6 months. I got a barber, but he don't see me often. You know what I mean?
Special occasions only, though. So it's robbed us of a culture. Like, men didn't have too many spaces to vent, honestly.
That's very true. I ain't really think about that, man. But it's inflation, too, right? Like, niggas gotta eat. Like, I mean, you would hope that it would still be a reasonable, fair price for everybody. But then again, you got social media. You got celebrity barbers now who are charging grip to cut hair. You got people who got to pay for chairs. If you're living out here in the Bay, mm-hmm. in California specifically, everything is expensive. So you got to pay for that building that you're renting out. So I get it. But I think it is unfortunate that we don't have that space anymore. A lot of us due to, you know, the cost, man. Like, it's a lot to get your hair cut every 10 days.
Motherfuckers really throw they used to throw rent parties. They should throw barber parties.
They should. That'd be a hard-ass idea. Yeah, I know a couple of people who do events in their barber shops.
Really?
You know what I mean? But I think something more regular for us to continue to come up in the space.
Yeah.
Like, even if we're not getting a haircut, give us another reason to come through because of the therapy that the barbershop gives us. You know what I mean?
And I really think the young generation is missing that aspect where they, you know, they don't have to be taught a lesson to learn it. They could just sit in the barbershop and soak up game without feeling like somebody preaching to them.
Yeah, that's really true, man. Everything on the phone.
And you seeing it, like the results is just
wild.
Oh my God.
Wild. The results is bananas. That's why I'm over here stressing over whether or not I'm doing a good enough job with my son, because I know what he up against. You know what I mean? Like, I know what he got in his hand 24/7. They getting them information quicker than I can give it to him.
They giving them something. Yeah. I'll say that. What is a TV and ad copywriter?
So a television ad copywriter is something else I do aside from poetry. That's somebody who creates the language for companies and advertisements. Everybody needs language. Everybody needs something written. Right. So whether mm-hmm. you're writing on brochures and physical print media, or you're writing a language for commercials. So like, for instance, I've written a lot for Lexus. So a lot of those commercials you see with Blair Underwood talking while he's driving the car, I've written for McDonald's. I've written for the Emmys. I've written for Versus and Flow, the TV show I was on. So yeah, a copywriter is a person who creates language. And I think a lot of, and that's what I try to get people on who are artists in general who write, because that's really where the money at. You know what I mean? Like, that's the behind the scenes. You may not be the voice, but definitely the pen, and they paying for copywriting.
Yo, nigga, hook me up.
Listen, brother, I'll give you the game.
Nigga.
I'll get you some information when we get off of here.
Yo.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. And I got into that during quarantine, because when quarantine happened, the stages closed down. So I couldn't tour and do shows no more. We still had to eat. So I had an opportunity. Was the Emmys. I did something with the Emmys. But then I was already doing it. I started really doing it for Lexus heavily.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can write a 3.5-minute rap song or a 3-minute poem like me, and you got these people wanting 30 seconds of material, I bang that shit out in 5-10 minutes, and they giving me 3 days to a week to do it, and I'm returning it to you in 45 minutes. I look like a wizard to them. So now they like, you know, now they're like, oh my god, and they like it, this is amazing, and your turnaround time is astonishing. So now they know they can rely on you if they send you something. But also the game is, when they get something from somebody else and they don't like it, mm-hmm. and they have, let's say, 12 to 24 hours.
They're going to hit you up because they know.
They're going to send it to me and be like, yo, Prentice, can you clean this up?
And the bag is different at that point.
Oh, way different. And you sitting at the crib in hoop shorts and slides. Cooking breakfast for your kids. And so that was a play for me. Like, I wanted to figure out how this pen can support us. You know what I mean? And poetry really introduced me to the different lanes that writing comes with. You can be a producer. You can do copywriting. You just don't have to stick in the art. You don't have to be the face of everything. And then when you realize, you know, the opportunities that are there, one, to write for other people and other businesses. But again, man, you know, the money that's there, it's a no-brainer for me. And that frees up me to not have to stress. You know, as an artist, it's hard to create and not worry about money, especially when you're self-employed or an entrepreneur. Like, you always thinking about how we going to pay rent, how we going to eat, daycare, car, no, whatever it is that you got going on. But when you have a steady income with your pen, it kind of frees up that real passion for your art to kind of just flow and come as it's meant to. You know what I mean?
Is AI fucking the game up, though?
Yeah. Yeah.
I see a lot of artists that's like promoting it, and I just seems counterproductive to me.
Yeah, I think it takes away from human creation, man. You know, like I get it; it's the evolution of everything. But there used to be somebody who was writing and getting paid for what they can just type into the phone or the computer and generate now. So I think it definitely is, man. Talk about AI, man. I ain't like when Drake used that AI in the whole thing with Kendrick, man. I thought that was the weakest move ever. Like, bro, no. So, yeah, it's fucking the game, bro. Things is using AI for this record.
Okay, that was definitely a miss. Super miss. Yeah, and it went downhill from... Oh.
Oh, man, it was glorious to watch. I loved it.
And I fucks with Drake, man.
I do, too.
And my thing was, I seen somebody break down what he has done actually for the careers of everybody that has dissed him.
Uh-huh. I saw that too.
That's the sad part.
Yeah.
Like, I get it, but y'all could have went, you know, and maybe they did. They could have called him up. Bruh, you're doing too much. Stop. Blase split. Reach out to Jay Prince. Jay Prince can control him. Right. Whatever. Right. I don't know. But man, when they... Everybody, like, dude really has looked out for a lot of niggas.
You know what I think happened? I think a lot of people saw opportunity, so they went with it. But as they went with the opportunity, they probably saw, like, I saw, damn, what's the cat's name who be on Saturday Night Live? The cat who used to, I think he dated Ariana Grande. I forget his name. But there's one cat, and he was like, Drake is one of the best actors in the world because that's not him. He's portraying a rapper. I think what a lot of people saw was that they mm-hmm. saw somebody who could provide them with opportunity, who they fuck with to an extent, but they also saw a level of inauthenticity in them to some extent, right? And then when shit hit the fan, you know, like, I think some of them didn't rock with what they saw behind the scenes, and it was no longer advantageous for them to fuck with them like that. So they was like, fuck it, I'm gonna get on this line too.
I don't know. That's kind of weird though, because a lot of them niggas is not living what they talking about.
Most of them ain't.
Exactly. You know, so like, so your lies are better than his lies.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is, though. And that's the crazy thing about rap, the rap game to me. And that's like, the further I get, you know, I'm starting to get around, a good amount of artists, man. And the further you get in this, and me being a poet, it's a non-traditional lane. I'm not rapping. You know what I mean? So I'm not, nobody's expecting to hear about my lifestyle or my bank account or a car I drive in my art, because that's just not what I talk about. You know what I mean? And I'm not that type of person. I don't need people knowing, you know, like, how I'm living. I just want to live good and live nice.
Yeah.
Okay. And so when you get around these cats, man, and you start to see how many ain't like what they putting out there, you either going to get with it, or it's going to kind of disappoint you and kind of give you a perspective of what you're getting involved in. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I tell you, never meet your idols.
Yeah, man. It's crucial, man. A lot of them are dope, man, but a lot of them are not.
Yeah, I met some niggas and I'm like, oh, wow, man. Really, nigga? You?
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
Yeah. I feel you, man. That shit is so heartbreaking and disappointing.
Yo, what's the 1906 mean?
1906. That's the representative of my fraternity. I'm a member of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. We were founded December 4th, 1906. So,
why niggas always do that, bro?
Do what?
Give you the history lesson immediately. And it don't matter what frat, what sorority. Yeah.
When you pledge for real, you can't help it. I say that. I pledge, man. So it's indoctrinated, man. It's just, you know, it's just how it come out.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to Hampton University my first year in Hampton, Virginia. And then I came back home and went to San Jose State.
Okay. I got a cousin who went to Hampton.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I walked across my first day there. They got this called Ogden Circle. And the story is, if you walk across that lawn, you ain't going to graduate from there. And the very first day I was on campus, my ass was eating some hot Cheetos and just went across the line, bruh. I got to the other side and somebody was like, oh, I'm so sorry for you. You're not going to make it. I said, what you talking about? She said, you're not supposed to walk across that lawn. And lo and behold, my ass.
How the fuck is you supposed to know that, though?
Yeah. I was too mesmerized by that 18-1 ratio.
No comment. I'm going to leave that alone. All right. There is no you. There is only what I want you to be.
The system.
What's that mean?
The system is a poem that I'm blessed to have created, man. It is a literary masterpiece, and I'm blessed to be able to say that about my own work. It's a timeless work of art that I am, again, really fortunate to have thought of and constructed. When I thought of that line, it's exactly what it's saying. It's speaking from the perspective of this system. There is no you. There is only who I want you to be. We are programmed. We think we have control. You know, it's just like, look at Instagram. We think we got control, but you can say bitch-ass nigga to somebody and get banned. But you can scroll and see all these dead babies in Palestine. You can call somebody a fuckboy, but then you can watch a man go on a racist rant for 10 minutes. You think you're in control. They give us just enough to think that we have control.
Yeah.
And we don't realize how brilliant this American system is. This system is brilliant, bro. Like, it's brilliant. If you really think about, if you just look at us as black folks, like how they've managed to manipulate our minds and control us and, you know, give us the illusion that we have influence and power in the way they can just snatch it right away from you whenever they want. That shit is genius. They've been doing it for decades. So, you know, that statement is just basically what I felt the system would say initially, that there is no you. There is only who I want you to be, and who you think you are is who I've controlled you to be, and it's within the limited range of personality you can have. You know, so you kind of got to be courageous enough to say fuck that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm gonna figure out who I am, and I'm gonna walk in who I am, and, you know, regardless of who you tell me I'm supposed to be, I'm gonna be who I know I am.
Yo, at what point during the writing process do you realize this is one of those ones?
Oh man, it just happens when I'm done. When after I'm done writing it and that shit is already in my head and I ain't got to spend a couple of hours memorizing it, when I finish that last word and I say it back to myself and I'm like, whew. You know what I mean? Like, it's the greatest feeling in the world, and the more I do it, the more I have a respect for writing, because it's like sifting for gold. You know what I mean? Like, you got to write and keep writing and keep writing. And the problem is, like, you know, we were just talking about the system.
Mm-hmm.
That shit went viral. You know, that poem changed my life. And it was hard not to compare all of my other work to the system for like a year and a half, because it did so much for me. You know what I mean? And, you know, so I would write and I would be like, yo, this don't feel like the system felt. But it taught me a valuable lesson. Like,
yeah.
Each work stands for itself. It speaks for itself. And there will never be another system. Like, I won't do a part two. I won't, you know, try to continue and extend it. That piece of work is what it is. You know what I mean? And so I stopped searching for that same feeling that the system gave me, because the system didn't even happen like that. Like, the mechanics and everything came when I was at a slam in Charlotte, and I knew we weren't advancing to the next round. So I just started pop locking while doing it. And then I was like, ooh, shit. Ooh, shit. I went home and perfected it. And it was that moment, like, oh, this is one of the ones when I got, because originally it was just the words. It wasn't all the mechanics.
Okay.
I had to go home and, you know, put in some work in the lab to come up with that. But yeah, man, when you write and you just feel it, you just know it's one of them ones, man. Like, this is a killer. And I memorized it right off top.
So is there like a circuit for like professional poets mm-hmm. to compete against each other?
Well, they have slam poetry, which is how I got introduced into spoken word poetry, was through mm-hmm. slam. I was on the Oakland Slam team in 2003. And at that point in time, I only had one poem. So my mom signed me up without me knowing. And I did well. So the coach, she asked me to come back. Mm-hmm. And she was like, you should come back next week. And I was like, I only got this one poem. Because, you know, like I told you, I was influenced by my cousin. So that poem, The Streets, is what I did. So I wrote a poem new every week to compete to be on the team, a new poem. So I had to write a new poem and memorize it within like 5 days to compete mm-hmm. against all these other people. And I did that, and I made the slam team. And 2.5 months later, we came in fourth in the nation. I came in 13th in the nation individually. So I got introduced to slam that way and just learned the slam circuit. But then I got tired of just complete strangers putting a number on my work, you know, mm-hmm. telling my work is worth a 7.2 or 9.8 or 6, you know, like I didn't like that. So you have the slam circuit, and then you have for traveling poets, you do have venues across the country and individuals who really put a lot of work into our craft and highlighting and celebrating spoken word poetry and poets. So there is a market. It just is not big enough for me, if that makes sense. Not that I don't participate or do shows, mm-hmm. but I see the bigger picture. You know what I mean? And it's easy in this craft of poetry, especially now with social media, for you to just rely on the likes and views, you know what I'm saying? And those, you know, those stages where there are a good amount of people there, or you can have aspirations like me to, you know, fill in, you know, auditoriums and stadiums. And, you know, I've had Bobby Brown, Faith Evans open up for me in Hollywood. You know what I'm saying?
Are you serious, nigga?
Yeah, Music Soul Child.
Bobby Brown, though?
I had about last September.
Yo, that's crazy.
It was crazy. I'm sitting there watching Bobby Brown rock like I'm about to close this show. And then I murdered a fucking show. And I'm like, Bobby Brown just opened for me. Or I'm like, in front of 5,000 people on a 83-degree night in the middle of Hollywood. You know what I mean? Like that puts things into perspective. Like, oh, it's bigger than just that circuit you asking about. You know what I mean? Like, if you put in the work and you believe in yourself and you go for it, you can find yourself doing shit that you would never imagine your poetry taking you to do. You know what I mean? And that's what the Grammys were for me. Like, that was my next step. Like, and then when I got to the actual Grammys in February, I was like, oh, shit. Like, we're here. You know what I mean? But also, I got there and realized, oh, I'm a minnow in the ocean here.
Yeah.
And I'm Grammy nominated. You know what I mean? But still, I realized, like, oh, I got some more work to do. Okay. So I needed to see the next level in order to understand, one, that there is a next level and the work I got to put into to get above that one. You get what I'm saying? So that's kind of how I just approach life and my art. It's always like, all right, what's next? What do I want to do? What do I want to create? Accomplish it. Getting that new door so I can figure out who the people are in there and how they're moving so I can learn how to infiltrate that shit too. So that's, you know, that's kind of like my whole plan with this poetry, man, is to always infiltrate and move up.
So is there a mountaintop for you right now, or are you just right now just climbing to the clouds?
Yeah, there's never been a mountaintop for me. Yeah, I'm too ambitious with this. I'm too obsessive. I'm always trying to get better. I'm always looking to practice. I'm always looking to write with other people, to push my pen. Because you get complacent, man. You get passed up. You know what I mean? And, you know, I think that art is subjective, right? So I don't believe there is a best, but I actually believe there are a handful of people who can be considered the best. And, you know, that's what I want. You know what I mean? I want to always forever grow. I love being a student of this craft. You know what I mean? Like, it's endless. You don't age out of this. You know what I mean? Like, you don't age out of wisdom. You keep gaining it. So if you can gain it and articulate it, you're forever effective. You know what I mean? So it's just a matter of what you want to do with that. Do you want to keep it on stage? Do you want to slip some knowledge into a movie script? Do you want to, when they asked me to rewrite some shit, and, you know, like for the Emmys, they wanted me to rewrite something about this, like, whole multicultural, different backgrounds, we are here was the thing. But there were certain things that I said within what I wrote that I slipped in there for Black people, right? Mm-hmm. But they don't get it. You know what I'm saying? Like, the way I put it in the words, they don't hear it. It sounds like it's fluent, but I knew what I was doing. So, you know, it's different ways to input your wisdom, the things you learn and things you want to say into writing. And I think that's the beauty of it. That's what makes it limitless. You know what I'm saying? Like I can be on a poetry Mount Rushmore. That's cool. But I still ain't filled up an auditorium yet. I've been on tour with Jill Scott and performed in an auditorium that was full, in a stadium that was full. But I won't.
I'm sorry to cut you off. You said Jill Scott.
You said what?
You said Jill Scott, right?
Yeah, my poetry collective, Fiveology, we went on tour with Jill Scott.
Oh, my God. And I'm sorry, man. I'm pretty ignorant. Sometimes I just stop listening after I hear Jill Scott. Because, man, listen.
Hey, she's so dope, bro. She's so real, authentic. She's so dope, man.
So is she on the side listening to you?
Nah. But she is giving her feedback. Like, really? Nah, I got to clean this up. Or that wasn't... I need... You know what I'm saying? I've seen her release a couple of cats who are big now who are on tour with us who got let go because they just wasn't bringing it hard enough. So,
damn, Jill Scott firing niggas?
Oh, come on, bro. She don't play. Oh. You talk about Jill Scott. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to be around greatness to understand how greatness operates.
I would be crushed if Jill Scott fired me.
Yeah, but you also get your ass back to work.
You know what I'm
saying? That's facts. It's either going to make you crumble or you're just going to light a fire under your ass.
Yo, man.
You know what I'm saying? But you got to get around. You got to figure out how to get around those people that you respect and admire who have greatness to learn how great people operate. And great people aren't telling you that everything you do is dope. So you can't be an artist who's always around people who are like, yeah, that shit was dope, P. That shit was dope. Nah, I need some people like, nah, that wasn't it, bro. You know, you need to put in some work here. You know what I mean? And I think that's the difference between great people and good people is that some people get sucked up into just being praised all the damn time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you don't really grow from that.
Yeah. Applause hogs.
Yeah, absolutely, man. You know, and that shit feels great. Everybody loves that feeling. But, you know, what are you in it for? You in it for the applause or you in it to be great?
So who do you test out material on, like in your circle?
The people, you know what I mean? Like, I practice 24/7. I probably got like 12 new poems in my head right now that nobody's ever heard. I just create, man. And when I feel like it's time for me to bring this one out, or if the spirit hits, it's boom. But the people always let me, you know. But I also realize that everything is not meant for the stage, so I do a lot of writing just for myself now, which is healthy. You know what I mean? Because you can also get sucked into everything you write. You worrying about how people are going to respond to it. Are you thinking about what stage you're going to do this at? You know, I save that for the ones that are the ones, like you were saying. You know, the ones that I'm like, whoo, them ones I can't wait to get on stage with. But you also got to write for yourself. You know what I mean? Because, again, this whole poetry and writing thing is therapy for me. And I don't want to lose sight of that.
At what point during the writing process do you realize, oh, man, it's horrible?
Oh, never, man. I don't write horrible shit. I don't write horrible shit. I might write some shit that, you know, ain't never going to see the light of day, but it ain't going to be horrible. You know what I mean? And I tell people all the time, like, you know, if it's your truth, man, it's your story, it's not bad. Now, you know, if you have to put that into a craft and you're not executing properly, then it can be bad, but... You know, this is my gift. This is my lane. You know, I did forensic speech and debate in high school. So I was a theater kid. So I was remembering scripts and performing on stage and winning competitions and tournaments in high school. So this is an extension of that. And I've just been blessed to have identify my talents at an early age, and just really, I've always won, man.
Yo, that's a Who's the brother in the background of the videos?
That's my man Sean, who I did the album with, Sean Williams.
Oh, I'm like, wow, what's he doing?
Yeah, so for the campaign, for those videos were for our album For Your Consideration 24. Mm-hmm. We thought it was important that, you know, I thought it was important that we both were seen, regardless if it was his poem or mine.
Okay.
To show the unity and camaraderie and the support. You know what I mean? So that's why you always see him in those videos, because those were for our campaign, our Grammy campaign.
Was that your son? You did the Being a Black Man in America video.
Yeah, that's my dude to hear, man. That's my 13-year-old.
Yo, that's a beautiful fucking video too.
Thank you, man. Shout out to Black's Menswear, man. My man DeAndre, he has an organization called Black's Menswear, and they do these black men's flash mobs across the country.
That's him.
Yeah.
Put me in touch with him, man. We gotta.
I got you off top. My man DeAndre, man. So you know, I worked with them about coming to Oakland, man. I've been begging them for years, and you know, got them connected with the right people, and you know, got brothers to come out. And I was like, if there's any time I'm gonna do this video, it's gonna be now. You know what I mean? So you know, being in Oakland and at home, and with all them brothers being there, you know, my other son is with his mama, but I had to have mine with me. I was like, you have to be around this amount of black men.
Yeah.
Looking like this, standing like this, so you can get this energy. And even if you don't understand it now,
you'll get it later.
You're going to do this video. You know what I mean? So this video will always be documentation of that. And again, like you were saying, like we were talking about earlier with like things not being on our time, he didn't really realize it now. You know what I mean? He just went out there, did a video with his dad. It went viral. Cool. But when he's 23, when he's 26, when he's 30 and he look back at that shit, he may be like, yo, I get it now. Like, I get what my dad did by having me not only stand beside him, but I had him in front of me. You know what I mean? Like, he had me in front of him while he's talking about what it means to be a black man in America. So my whole thing is planting seeds for my kids. You know what I mean? And I do it through my art. My art is forever documented. So my oldest, he cutting up right now. And I mean cutting up. But he always be able to go back to when he was born, to look at the articles, to look at the Arsenio Hall show, to look at the interviews I've done and watch me speak on him and talk about his power and his strength. And maybe that may feed him later when his mind's in a better space to get himself right. You get what I'm saying? So I'm using my art to plant seeds for my kids too. You know, I'm all about making plays, man. So I know what I'm doing when I do it. He may not realize it, but yeah, standing next to me, man, that was special. I wouldn't have did it without him.
Any shows coming up?
I'm working on a 60-minute piece that I'm trying to get on Broadway. So right now, what I'm doing is constructing that. I'm creating art with my man, Matt, who got nominated with us for all the visuals for our album and recorded the album. And I've been at home for the past month, and I've been on the road the past 6 months. So I've been enjoying this. So I'm back at it in October. I'm in New York for a huge theater program and gala that I'll be doing. I got a couple shows here and there, but right now I'm focusing on home and creating the art.
Because I got like that.
You know what I mean? Like all this year, I was so sucked into performing and traveling. I've been gone all year that sometimes you got to take a step back and remember what your foundation is. And right now, like I said, we're making some moves with the family, and I'm happy that I'm home to see it. Put so much effort into it. So right now it's really like I'm laying low, so to speak, yanking my ass off.
I'm not mad at that, man. And if nobody else told you today, bro, I'm proud of you.
Oh, thank you, man. What makes you say that?
Because you're a black man doing your thing, bro. And I'm a big proponent of us telling each other we doing some dope shit.
Thank you, man. That feeds me so much. I think we need to say that to each other more.
I agree with you. So I make it a point, you know, to tell our people, hey, I like what you're doing. I'm probably going to hear it enough.
Thank you, man. Like I told you, too, like even when you reached out for me to do this, I was so happy because I wish more brothers reached out to me to just have conversations. Like, you don't got to have a million followers. You can have 10, but I just enjoy us talking to each other. You know what I mean? Like that, you saying you're proud of me, I felt that. That sounded sincere.
Well, you I wasn't lying, mean? Nigga. Damn.
And that's what I'm saying. You know what I mean? We need to hear that shit. But if we don't put ourselves in rooms to hear it, we're not going to.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's that simple. And sometimes it takes somebody just being like, yo, I think you're dope. Let's have a conversation.
Yeah. Like that energy you were talking about. Like, I want people to leave with a certain energy. You know, I never wanted to throw people under the bus or ask ridiculous, goofy questions. Okay, sometimes I ask goofy questions, but not goofy questions that's like just salacious type shit.
Right.
You know, like I'll ask you which show is better, Seinfeld or The Cosby Show? Right, that's a goofy question. By the matter of fact, which one is better, Seinfeld?
I've never watched a whole episode of Seinfeld, so I'm automatic.
Never.
Never, bro. It's never Seinfeld. Jerry Seinfeld has never been. I don't enjoy his humor. So
extremely unfunny comedian. I don't understand why somebody offered this man a show, but the show, fucking priceless.
Is it really?
Oh my god! It's the dumbest. It's the simplest form of comedy because they do shows about absolutely nothing.
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 And that's what it feels like to me. Like, I'm gonna put on an episode of Martin for show before I put on Seinfeld.
Martin has not aged well for me.
Really? The first three seasons I feel like are classics.
They were classics when I was, what is that, 20 years ago?
Yes. Yeah, like, man.
I don't know, like the Fresh Prince has gotten better for me.
You know, so I had an argument on the gram last week because the question was, if you had to get rid of somebody, I forget out of the four, but Will Smith, it was an argument between Fresh Prince or Martin. Which show got to go?
Oh, Martin.
I said Fresh Prince.
Oh, my God. No. No.
I get why you would say you got to keep the Fresh Prince, but I can't get rid of the nostalgic value and just the laughs for me for Martin, man. Like, it was so iconic for me.
I would culturally at their peaks, the two you can't compare with Martin.
Agreed. Culturally, yeah, absolutely agree.
But from a strictly sitcom standpoint, the comedy on The Fresh Prince was just written better.
Yeah, for me.
It was a more mature comedy.
I think it was a better TV show and series. Absolutely, I just feel just like the brash nature. Yeah. Of Martin, and then you know, I also, you know, like, I'm biased. I loved him as a host for Def Comedy Jam.
Hilarious.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, just his brash nature and him being how he was, how he delivered his work, I just enjoyed Martin longer. I still watch The Fresh Prince, but yeah, man, that's one that, you know, I have people ruining friendships talking about that shit.
Actually, I'm they're going to be mad at me for this one, but I'll take the Golden Girls over both of them.
Well, you're a savage, man. The Golden Girls was classic. My grandma used to watch that all the time.
I've never not laughed hysterically on an episode of the Golden Girls, ever.
Golden Girls was the shit, though. It was. I feel it. I'm not even mad at you. Golden Girls was the shit. Yo, I'll tell you another one that I love to this day, Three's Company.
Low key, fucking hilarious, man. Oh, what's his name? What's the landlord name?
Mr. Furley, wasn't it?
Mr. Furley.
Oh,
it's a wild boy.
Yeah, man. Some of them white sitcoms, man. So I enjoy, like, you know, my homies make fun of me because I enjoy a certain type of white humor. You know what I mean? Like, this shit is entertaining to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Seinfeld just didn't have it for me.
I feel you.
Yeah.
That was a, you know, it was a feast or famine show. Like, you either really fucks with Seinfeld or you think it's the dumbest shit ever.
Yeah, and I'm on the dumbest shit ever. I'm on the ladder.
All right, so if people want to get in contact with you, they want to book your services, how they go about doing that?
You can always hit me at prentice1906@gmail.com for any booking. Again, prentice1906. You can hit me up at Instagram, PrenticePowell1906. You can go to the website, ForYourConsideration24.com, which is the album, the Grammy-nominated album that myself and Sean William put together. And you can always Google my name and find more information about what I have going on and, you know, what I'm doing, man. And brother, I appreciate you so much for this conversation.
Oh, man.
Like, for real, I appreciate you, man. I appreciate the people you've had on the show. You can tell a lot about somebody and you know, just where their brand is at by the people they choose to have on their platforms, man. And you've had some people that I really respect and admire for various reasons, man. Yeah, so shout out to you for giving some of us who don't necessarily get the attention that we've earned or maybe deserve an opportunity to speak, man. Like, you're doing great work, too. So I'm proud of you, brother. Like, for real. You didn't have to reach out to me, man. You did.
You know, kidding me, bro? Like, but I appreciate that, man. It's not. I don't take compliments well.
Yeah, it's hard sometimes.
Yeah,
but we still need to receive them, and we need to work at that shit too, man. Because you know, like, it's easier. It's easy to be doing great work and shrug it off because it's who you are. It's what you into. But at the same time, I'm learning the older I get. We also need to receive that shit and talk our shit sometime. Even if it's behind closed doors in the mirror for 15 seconds, man, we need to pat ourselves on the back because there's going to be times where nobody does it for us. And if we're not trained to be able to receive grace and praise, man, you know, we may be robbing ourselves of something we need to be fed.
Shit. Every once in a while, I pop out and show niggas.
Yeah, man. I just ordered a hoodie yesterday that says that shit. That's the to-do list. Pop out and it has a box and it says show niggas and it has a box.
Yo, I need that link right there because
so the Instagram is God is Dope. God is Dope. Go to God is Dope on Instagram. You can order it right off there.
All right, bet I got you. Yo, yeah. I can't possibly thank you enough, man, for coming on. I don't know what on the planet, but if there is something possibly that I can do for you, let me know and I got you.
I definitely will, brother. I appreciate it. Tune into an episode of the podcast, man. All Black Men Need Therapy.
And follow them on Instagram, too.
Yeah, absolutely. ABMMT.com, man. Check us out. We're doing dope work.
And shout your brothers out that you do the show with, too.
You said what?
Shout your brothers out you do the show with.
Yeah, man. My man's Chief and Bill, man. I wouldn't be on the podcast if it wasn't for them starting the podcast. So, you know, again, man, y'all check it out. All Black Men Need Therapy. You go to ABMMT.com. We got a lot of dope stuff coming up. Matter of fact, we got a show in Connecticut, our first poetry showcase that we're doing, August 24th out there in Connecticut. All details on our page. Flyer will be out soon. Y'all check it out. We're trying to get healthy as Black men.
Y'all going to Bridgeport?
I don't remember exactly where it's at yet.
That is the Black city in Connecticut.
Yeah, I know Chief. He lives in New Britain. So I be in New Britain all the time. That's where we record.
Oh man, I went to Bridgeport once, man. I had never heard of Bridgeport before going there.
I'm just not here from Bridgeport, coming from you.
Oh my God!
And I'd be out there every 5-6 weeks.
Nigga, Bridgeport is like Harlem, but in Connecticut.
Oh nigga, I gotta go there.
Like, you know what? Maybe Harlem. What's great though? Bridgeport is like Baltimore.
Okay, and I fuck with Baltimore.
But in Connecticut, you know, okay. You know, you go from all you know, mom and pops driving the little SUVs to goom, 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 goom.
Yeah, I like that energy, man.
It ain't big, but day gets busy in Bridgeport.
That's what's up, man.
You know. Anyway, man, let me let you get out of here, man. Again, I want to thank you, man, for your time, your wisdom, and your energy. And y'all make sure y'all check out Prentice Powell and everything that he does. Man, it's a class act. Appreciate you, bro.
Appreciate you, man.
No doubt, man. Have a good one.
All right, you do the same, brother.
Peace.
Peace.
Yo, that's very, very dope, man. I'll be back at, shit, in an hour? Yeah, in an hour. And we have Brian Brown coming on at 7 o'clock. That should be another dope conversation. Definitely appreciate it. Shout out to you, Deuce Collars. Do me a favor. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share the show on YouTube. Hit us up on Instagram. Hit the fan page up on Facebook. That is Intellectually Petty Radio. If you just type that in your Google search bar, it will come up. On that note, I am Jobs. I am your host, and I'll be back in a minute. Peace. Okay, let's try that piece again. Peace.